Fear and Loathing in the Wasteland, The Happy Bureaucracy, Book 2, by M.P. Fitzgerald, narrated by Gary Bennett. Author's note. Strewn between drug use, groin malice, and cursing on a level tantamount to sacrilege are even more gratuitous mentions of bureaucracy. These bureaucratic references may not be for the weak of heart. Also, child endangerment. Did I mention child endangerment? Chapter 15. Arthur was the first one out of the tent. The commotion outside immediately distracted him from his blood-soaked sock and the sharp pain in his leg. The camp was flooded with enforcers and auditors. Men and women scurried back and forth, like ants after their nest had been kicked in. "What's happening?" Robbie shouted to another enforcer as he hurried by. But no one seemed to know. They were following orders, he said, nothing else. Nearby, the medical tents were being filled with dehydrated and sunburnt slaves, now free. A few men marched bloodied slavers bound in zip ties past Arthur, and the sounds of war had ceased. It looked like they were victorious. It looked like they had just won. But if that were true, why had they been ordered to retreat? No one had any answers, but everyone was looking for them. The loudspeakers stayed silent. Six auditors had spotted Ralph and hustled to him. A few of them eyed Arthur. This made him nervous, but he guessed that the gaze they gave him was a grateful one for saving their lives. They gazed at Robbie, too, but this was probably mostly out of curiosity and horror. The six men gathered around Ralph, and one of them spoke.
"Reporting for duty, sir,"
an auditor in the crowd said. "We've been looking everywhere for you, sir."
Ralph stammered.
"What's happening, sir? Why have we been ordered to retreat? We just breached the walls. The slavers are surrendering." This was odd news, good news, but in context, totally alien to common sense. Arthur's elation over the assured victory had no idea what to do with the dread it had partnered with. Regardless, Arthur had promised to help Ralph, to make him look good, and he had mostly failed at it. Well, that wasn't fair. Failed was too kind of an assessment. Arthur had completely botched the job. Ralph was not some rival coasting unfairly in the office. He was just a man who looked up to Arthur, and maybe even resented him for being what he could not be. Ralph was just a man who had survived, and though he did so cowardly, he was still one of the very few who did so without harming or taking advantage of other people. That was worth respect. So Arthur stepped forward. "He was just sending me to find out," he said.
Yes, go and do that," Ralph said with little confidence.
There was nothing Arthur could do about that. If no one around them knew what was happening, it was because no one else had seen what Boyd had atop his perch. That meant that whatever it was that Boyd had seen to give the order to retreat was far away.
"I need binoculars," he said to the group of men that had surrounded them.
No one moved.
"Give the fucking man what he wants,"
Ravia said, breathing cigarette smoke from out of her nostrils like an angry ebony dragon. Arthur had missed these outbursts from her. Arthur had missed her. The moment they were out of the way and safe, he would need to get her alone. An agent who had kept the binoculars from the day before reached into his mailbag, fished them out, and handed them to Arthur. Arthur moved to the nearest van, Robbie following just behind him, and left Ralph and his men behind.
"I need to get to the top of that van," he said to Robbie. "I have no idea how Boyd has been getting atop his."
"Give me the binoculars and boost me up there. I'm lighter than you," said Robbie.
Arthur handed them to her, then crouched down and intertwined his hands for her to step on. She placed her foot in his hands, and he lifted her up with ease. Neither of them said anything about it, but if they were being honest, they were both surprised that Arthur handled it as well as he did. In no time, she was on top of the van. Just that small amount of height had made all the difference.
"I can see the whole camp from up here," she said. "Good spot for checking out the horizon, too."
Arthur watched as she removed her shades, then pressed the binoculars to her face. She looked in the direction of the city.
What do you see? Arthur cried down from below, hands cupped over his mouth. Jesus, I'm right here, Arthur, said Rabia. I'm not suddenly a million miles away just because I'm above you. No need to yell like a lunatic.
Arthur suddenly became self-aware of all the yelling he had done at Boyd just the day prior.
Some smoke, she said. No fires as intense as we lit, though. Bodies of the dead, from both sides, mostly theirs. I don't see anything unusual.
She took the binoculars off of her face, then scanned the horizon without them for a moment, looking slowly from side to side.
Wait, she said, as her head paused at something.
She then pressed the binoculars against her eyes once more.
I see dust and exhaust.
Motorcycles? He asked.
Maybe, she replied. Too far away to tell, but if you think it's the colonel, the dust cloud is too big for just his psychotic sleigh.
She lowered the binoculars and looked at him.
Did he leave?
Yeah, Arthur replied. He left Slaver City yesterday in that same direction. The rest of the slavers stayed put.
Listen, Arthur. Last night I picked off an ambush, killed about 10 men.
You're horrifying.
Thanks, I missed you too, G-Man. This ambush, they snuck around the mountain. I think they were going to come down it behind our army to flank it. While I was sifting through their stuff, I found something unsettling.
Rami climbed down the van and handed the binoculars back to him, then lit a cigarette.
They were paid in money, Arthur. Real money.
Arthur clicked the top of his pen and noticed for the first time that his hands were sweaty, then shuffled his feet.
Do you think Boyd paid them?
No, she replied.
He's a dumb, evil Nazi goatfucker, but I don't see why he would attack his own troops.
Arthur looked at her with a cocked eyebrow.
Boyd had tried to get them killed twice in as many days, and just the day before was fully prepared to sacrifice 12 auditors and an enforcer just to silence him.
Rabia rolled her eyes.
At least not at such a large scale. Besides, what would that accomplish? No, I don't think it was Boyd. The slavers were paid in everything except $2 bills.
Arthur was not convinced, but decided to leave it alone.
So what? He said. You think these people in the distance paid them? Yes, I think those people out there may be the colonel's main client.
It had been written on every page of the colonel's business ledger. Without exception, each page simply had the words main client scrawled across it. Whoever they were responsible for purchasing the grand majority of slaves for the colonel. Whoever they were, they had to be a large organization to need to own that many people.
How big of a group do you think it is? Arthur asked.
Rabia took a long drag off of her cigarette, then yawned. Arthur did not know how long she had been passed out for, but it certainly did not count as sleep.
They look at least to be as large as our army, judging by the size of the dust cloud. Hard to tell at that distance.
No sooner was Rabia done talking did the loudspeaker boom into the atmosphere once more.
All enforcers, line up on the north side of camp. Defend at all cost.
The operator repeated the order twice more, and the camp, which was mostly settling by the time Rabia had jumped down from the van, became a rushed ecosystem once more. Enforcers ran toward the direction of the dust cloud and lined up in a defensive formation. The only ones that did not move were the auditors and the slaves. Arthur looked at Rabia, hoping that she would not part with them just yet. She smiled.
I'm taking this one out of your own book, but technically this is my day off.
The two returned to the still confused and awkward group of auditors that they had left behind. Arthur approached Ralph, noting that Richard was nowhere to be seen. Without his cousin whispering in his ear, Ralph might try to do something to prove himself. Arthur was not sure if this was good or bad. They explained what Robbie had seen the night before and what she had seen now. Ralph looked no more confident than he had just minutes ago before Robbie climbed the van. Arthur was ready to do what he could to help him.
Everybody listen up, Ralph cried to the group of men. Arthur here knows better than I do. Most of my decisions have actually been his.
We know, a man in the crowd exclaimed. That was pretty obvious.
The rest of the men muttered in agreement. A few of them kicked at the dirt. None of them looked at Ralph.
Okay, Ralph said. That's fair. But look, I'm just saying let's cut out the middleman. I know it goes against protocol, but I'm just going to do what Arthur says. So let's all be honest and just listen to Arthur, okay?
Ralph turned to a stunned Arthur.
I don't know what I'm doing. I'm pretty sure you don't either. But at least you don't hesitate to do what's right.
There is another army coming. What do we do?
Arthur was not prepared for this. Arthur wasn't even sure if he wanted the responsibility of leading. Sure, he had basically been in charge all along. This only changed the formality of the situation. But he could barely live with himself for the choices he had made already.
That is against protocol, sir. You're the manager.
Cut the shit, Arthur, said Rabia.
She looked at the growing dust cloud in the distance, then stomped out her cigarette and stepped toward him.
Your plan worked. It got the slaves freed, got the IRS to do something that was right and just. You're a natural G-man, but all of your stupid fucking decisions are made when you follow protocol.
She placed her hand softly on his shoulder.
When you follow orders, when you do as you're told, shit goes down. You want to make the right decision? Ignore what the fuck your clipboard tells you, and go with what your soul wants.
A single auditor started slowly clapping at this.
No, 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 Arthur yelled at the man. She's on drugs. Please don't clap.
Rabia looked Arthur in the eyes and stood on her toes so that she was level with him. They were bloodshot from a lack of sleep, dehydration. But they were not lazy, glossed over, or pinholed from drugs. She also did not respond to him with cursing or snark, or even death threats. Rabia was being serious.
This organization could do a lot of good, but good men like you need to step up to get them done.
She removed her hand from his shoulder, then brought it up to the tip of her cap in salute.
What are your orders? What should we do?
The colonel had gone to fetch his main client. The slavers knew that they were coming, but surrendered and gave up their slaves. Boyd was preparing for an attack and had taken the leash off of the auditors that now surrounded him. Arthur had the full confidence, however misplaced, of his friends and colleagues. Boyd had promised Arthur that the slaves would be protected, but had also forced a little girl to try and kill him. Boyd could not be trusted. All of this, all of these loose ends tied up into...
what?
Arthur didn't know. He had no master plan. He just knew that the freed slaves needed to be protected.
Rabia, he said, go tell Boyd about the colonel's main client. The bastard needs all the information he can get about who we may be up against.
Rabia smiled wickedly, then ran toward Boyd's control van. Arthur turned toward Ralph and the others.
Protect the people we freed. That is your only order. They are unharmed bystanders. Keep them safe.
It wasn't much, but it was all he cared about.
Ralph, Arthur continued, you and I are going to the front lines.
What?
Ralph protested. I know I just said you should be in charge, but we are horrible fighters, Arthur.
I know, but there are people here we need to protect. People I need to protect. Aside from the hundreds we just freed, there is also your dumbass cousin, my girlfriend, and a little girl that I once promised would be safe and now isn't.
Okay, so one,
Ralph replied as the others dispersed and headed toward the slaves.
Richard will stay far away from danger because he's related to me.
Two, Robbie seems like she can protect herself better than any of us ever could.
And three, that little girl stabbed you like 10 minutes ago. Why did you put me in charge if you were just going to argue with me?
Ralph looked down at the dirt.
Sorry, he said.
Because, honestly, you're a better man than me.
And I kind of hate it.
Ralph sighed, then looked up at Arthur.
I'm not sure if you're a better leader, but you are a better man.
Arthur clicked his pen.
I'm not a better man, he said. But I am a better bureaucrat.
And at that, Arthur patted Ralph's back companionably, realizing that this was probably the first time either man had seen each other for what they were, and not as petty rivals or role models, but as friends. Only a few enforcers had failed to make it out to the side facing the advancing threat,
and currently Arthur and Ralph followed them to that side. Arthur knew that the auditors, who could barely fire a gun, would not be much help in the front, and he desperately hoped that none of them would have to protect the freed slaves. Hopefully, no one would breach the front line. The men and women ahead of him, however, were different. These were trained fighters, most of them veterans and survivors. They were the IRS's answer to fighting off the madness that the United Wastes spread. Whoever was approaching them, whoever the colonel had fetched to save his city, they were probably not prepared for the only organized military force still left in America. Well, that's what he hoped.
About the author. M.P. Fitzgerald is an author and humorist dedicated to injecting the feverish gonzo style into fiction. You can get Memos from the Wasteland, which is the official prequel to this book, free. It contains hilariously bleak office drama, Robbie's diary, and Arthur's last letter from his father. To get your copy, just head over to his website at mpfitzgerald.art. You'll also get free updates on future audiobooks and more. We hope you have enjoyed A Happy Bureaucracy by M.P. Fitzgerald, narrated by Gary Bennett. Text copyright 2019 by M.P. Fitzgerald. Production copyright 2021 by M.P. Fitzgerald.
Music by Dustmice. Available on all streaming services and dustmice.bandcamp.com.